Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospectives on the Youth Critic Network. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospectives. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is James Rizel from the Rebel Scum Podcast. It almost slipped my mind for a second. The Rebel Scum Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. That's me. No one knows it, so that's fine that you forgot it. It's a Rebel Scum Podcast. Thanks for having me on again. This is always fun.
Oh, yes. And today we are continuing the Spielberg of 85 retrospective with the Goonies.
Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.
Hey, my friend, the map!
Whoa, you guys realize what we could do?
I don't want to go on any more of your crazy Goonie adventures.
Meet Mikey.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Brand. Andy.
Shame, shame.
Come on, Brand. Slip her the tongue.
That's disgusting. No, I can't even look.
Mouth.
I gotcha. Now get out from behind her. You're ruining the painting. You're ruining my job.
Stephanie. Data.
Boy, Bango!
Ow!
Guys, isn't that neat?
And Chunk.
Flopped.
They call themselves the Goonies.
We did Back to the Future a while back, and now we're back with the Goonies, Richard Donner's classic. And James, what do you think of the Goonies?
I was a kid in 1985. I was 4 years old. I was a kid, really young, and it was one of those movies where when you were a kid and you watched it, you kind of wanted to go on, like, because the thing that was great about it was a grounded in a heightened reality adventure about kids. There's nothing spectacular. It's spectacular. It is, but there's it's not like aliens are coming down or anything like that. It's just these kids go out and they kind of, stumble across a bunch of the wrong doors and whatnot they go through. So it was a lot of fun as a kid. Growing up, it was one of those things where I kind of forgot about it as a teenager in the 90s. And then when I hit college in 2000, it kind of like came back into my life. And it's strange because it came back in whatever year, 2000, 2001, whatever. And it hasn't really gone away. It's kind of just stuck around. And it seems to get more and more popular with each passing year. It's so weird.
It's an odd film because my relationship was, I saw it when I was a kid too, but I saw it when it first came out on DVD. So that's my kind of relationship to it. And I always loved the adventure part of it, and I always liked the kids. But watching it now, and I think they just released the 4K edition for what is it, the 35th anniversary? And so rewatching it now, it's like, I love the Cyndi Lauper song. It's pretty good, even though it has hardly anything to do with the movie. I still love the kids and their chemistry, and it's very much what has inspired Stranger Things, that dynamic of like all the kids and they're talking over each other. Like that chemistry and that excitement is there. But for me, I'm kind of like, you kind of really do have to sit and wait for like the movie to happen, because there's a long stretch from when they get to when they find the map, and then when they actually like start the journey, like under the restaurant, under the house or restaurant where they go. There's a long stretch. Yeah. So, but other than that, it's a fun movie. Go ahead.
That's a great point, because that's like it's like a product of its time. And nowadays everything is go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And 35 years ago, that was fast paced, right? Like it's just the way movies have been told over time. That's one of the ones that, movie trailers are an example, right? If you watch an old movie trailer, they are unwatchable. They're just like, oh, what's going on? Now that's like, you know, they've really fine-tuned it and figured it out, fine-tuned it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a product of the time where it was slow paced. It was a gradual build. It's like, hey, let's just have fun with these characters. And then from there, we'll worry about the adventure because it's going to come. So it's a great point that you bring up. And it's just, it's movies are told very differently in this day and age. It's, you know, strange. Yeah. Stranger Things.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's true. But I think, you know, once we figure out like kind of like, what is the motivation? So, you know, I talk about this thing dragging on, but the thing is, the setup is so well done because you are told like these are kids and they're given a map and they want to, you know, go on this treasure and adventure, you know, this kind of, you know, kid mindset. But then you get the emotional and physical stakes when like the realtors, I guess that's what they're, the evil realtors come by and are like, we want to foreclose on your house. Can you give your papers to your mom or dad? And you just see like, as everyone goes away and they're sad that, you know, the foreclosure is happening. Just Mike is kind of having that Luke Skywalker moment of just like looking over Astoria, the town, and just like, you know, I want to change this. I want to change my outcome of being kicked out of my house, but you know, I don't know what other way other than this, you know, map, this treasure hunt, essentially.
The 80s were such a unique time. It was it just the way things were happening there. And yeah, I, you know, cause you love film and you study it. You notice how like movies in the mid to late 70s and then throughout the 80s, they're like the misfit years of filmmaking, you know, where you're like, mm-hmm. You look at Chris Columbus, you know, this Gremlins, this is weird movies that you just look at them, you say they would never be made today. Like they could only have been made 30, 40 years ago in that weird time period of the 80s where they were trying to figure out movies and they took, you know, this suburban world that was really kind of, you know, really, really being pushed on and the families. And they said, this is it. It's just kids having fun. Every time I watch it, I look at it, I'm like, it captures that time period so well and perfectly. And you're like, this is just kind of, I mean, aside from, you know, I was never chased by murderers or anything, but you look at it, and you're like, it is that era perfectly captured in that film. It was such a unique time. Like, I mean, every decade you look at is unique, but the 80s, there's something in filmmaking that the 80s had that you never got after that. It was just this weird, like Die Hard and Predator. It's just like, oh, there's this weird vibe in them that's fantastic that they were not afraid to take chances, as big or little as the chance was, because in the Goonies, it's a small little chance that they took on everything, because it's all based in this reality, nothing extravagant going on. So it is unique.
The pirate ship stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it goes, you know, it has to have a little bit of fun, obviously. But
yeah,
the Cyndi Lauper song. Have you seen the music video for the Cyndi Lauper song?
I was gonna bring it up later, but yes, I have. It's it's very crazy.
Well, you got Spielberg's in it.
He's in it. Roddy Piper's in it as like, yeah, I guess, yeah, an Irish rich guy. Who has a weird like way of talking thing or saying stuff.
It's a two-parter video too.
It's like a 10-12 minute, yeah, music video.
And all she says in the song is Goonies are good enough.
I mean, there's other lyrics, but yeah, essentially.
More. It's mostly just that. I think one half of it is her just saying those words. Great video though. It's on the, well, you got into it from the DVD, which is intriguing because the movie's got iterations. Like the octopus wasn't in the original run of it, and you know, now you get it later on. And it's what a fun film.
It is, and you can, I mean, if you look very closely, you can, I mean, see like where stuff was cut and they just like did not go and try and like reshoot or, you know, replace it. Like the like you mentioned the octopus scene. Like the octopus scene gets referenced at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But there's no octopus in the movie. And when you watch the scene itself, like, it's another good set piece, but you're kind of just like, but you kind of need to just get to the ship because you're just so, you've been bombarded with set piece by set piece by set piece that, you know, it's okay to take, you know, enjoy this moment of the ship, you know, take in the grandeur. We don't need this octopus. And then later on, you don't, it helps ease the tension because when they do jump off the boat, you're not like, oh my god, there's still an octopus in the water.
Yeah, and you know, if this movie came out today in the Twitter world, you know that people would be like, we were robbed of an octopus, we could have had this in a movie. As everything is cut, things are cut out of movies, there's always a reason for it, and usually it's the right decision. Every once in a while you get one something that you're like, oh man, but the octopus, like you said, you have the ship is your goal, and you want to get there, and the more obstacles you put in the way of getting there, the less vested I am, and the more I'm just like, get on with it already, let's get there. And they understood that, and it takes, like you said, it takes so long for the actual adventure to begin that maybe it's good that they shrink that spectacular element of it.
Yeah, I mean, and in the octopus scene, I mean, it really just is Mouth and Martha Plimpton's character, they're, you know, attacked by the octopus, you know, and it's a practical octopus. Like, that's the most impressive thing. It's a practical, pretty much a practical octopus. And, but they're, you know, and then Data comes in with a radio, and I can't make out what the song is. I don't know if you remember what it is, but it's like it's some really like upbeat, like 80s music. And then you just see the octopus just like jamming away as he lets them go. Like you just see the mouth just like to the music.
Only in the 80s.
Yeah. It's a funny scene, but it deserves to be in the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it's not necessary to the plot. It doesn't, other than being fun, it doesn't serve much of a purpose. I mean, it's a little bit of danger, but the whole movie is danger for these kids. So yeah, you know, it's one of those things that's fine to cut out, but it's interesting that people know it. You know, when I saw it as a kid, and you know, all that, what octopus?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair to Donner and company, the line happens so fast that you don't have to think about it too long.
No, it's a plug, look away for a second and you won't hear him say it, you know. It's
the blinking, you miss it. So to kind of, you know, cut the chase, I love the opening of this movie where we open the movie with a chase, and the music plays, and you know, we introduce like all the characters in different ways, and then we finally like reveal Mikey and Brand's relationship, and
Thanos.
Thanos and Samwise Gamgee.
And Samwise, yeah. It is a great cast, though. This movie has for youth actors, for young actors, it is a hell of a cast. They did a great job finding those kids.
Well, the actor who, and it's all mostly Amblin people, like people that have circled the Amblin casting rounds. I mean, you have Corey Feldman from Gremlins. I'm going to butcher this so much. Kei Hu Kwan from Temple of Doom. And then you have Robert Zemeckis' wife at the time in the movie as the mom. You have the boyfriend from The Lost Boys as the dad. I mean, it's, you just kind of circle, you know, the whole, like, it's a whole circle of people that have worked with Donner and Spielberg and that whole, you know, crew before. So, and it's a really good ensemble. And then, of course, Sean Astin is just perfect as the Mikey. I think that is, like, one of the best choices because he just has that, like, you know, kid look, you know, of like both happy but nerdy but sad. And I mean, you look at him and you want to be on an adventure with him. He just, yeah, I can't praise Sean Astin's performance enough. Like, it's a good kid acting performance.
Well, he carries you through the entire thing, and he's so believable that you go with him on it. It's just, he is the every kid, and he's just so honest in his portrayal that you buy into it. And then, you know, it's obvious why he would have such a great career following that. The movie largely rests on his shoulders. Goonies never say die.
They never do. No. Never die. Or never say die. And that's, you know, and I think that's the appeal of that whole group, is they all are charismatic all the way. Even Chunk, who, to be fair, is a stereotype of fat, is kind of a stereotype of fat people, of just like, you know, how he's just like, I'm always hungry, and he's clumsy, but you're so enamored by that performance that you kind of forget about it a little bit, and and he's the one that saves everybody. He's the one that, you know, gets everybody saved.
Yeah, I think back then, especially, you understood, you know, you take your cheap shots, but then you let them have their moment. You know, there's, you know, you right the wrongs that you committed earlier on by having him save the day and whatnot. And he befriends Sloth and the Truffle Shuffle. It's a great... Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's got a great arc, and he kind of comes. That's the point of this movie, though, is like it's like a young coming of age movie in the most exceptional way.
Mm-hmm. But in the midst of this very heightened fantasy of kids, you know, going on a treasure hunt, it's the more romanticized version of what would come later, a year later, in Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. The kids go on an adventure. In that movie, I think Rob Reiner deals with boys and what they're going through in adolescence a little better there in Stand By Me. But I don't think that that Stand By Me's goals are the same as the Goonies' goals. The Goonies' goals fun.
Yeah, they're completely. Well, Goonies actually plays like a G-rated Stephen King story, you know, like those kind of adventures with the kids, only, you know, there's not a killer on the loose or anything like that. It's just, well, there are, but it's definitely more G-rated. I guess nowadays it wouldn't be, but it's more kin and family friendly than the Stephen King counterparts, but they deal with the same themes. It's just the way that you're getting it across. And, you know, Stand By Me, I watched it as a kid. I was young when I saw Stand. I love Stand By Me. That was a great.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with. I would like that one more than Goonies when I was growing up. But they're both about the same type of thing. Only Stand By Me definitely deals with like the loss of that innocence, and Goonies is kind of embracing it and finding a pirate ship.
Goonies is embracing to stay with innocence. Yeah. But also in a way to move forward, because the whole idea of the movie is to pillage your own way forward into finding your own, you know, independence. And the idea of independence is the treasure, the MacGuffin, if you will. And so for, you know, Goonies, like, to me, I think the most pivotal scene is when they're in the wishing well. And they have, you know, Troy up above with his friends, and they are like, we'll send the bucket, you know, and all this. And then Mikey goes, you know, no, we can't. We have to purge forward, because up there, that's going to be, you know, the end of our you know, houses and all this. We have to purge our own path forward through One Eye Willie's, you know, death trap filled treasure hunt. So. And that's what I really, you know, I find, and that's, to me, I feel like that is the way forward for, you know, like, I feel like there's a lot of little Spielbergisms, you know, and even then, and even towards the end of this movie, Spielberg kind of has like a comment on like nostalgia and, you know, iconism, because throughout this movie, Mikey kind of treats One-Eyed Willie as this like icon, this like, you know, legend and icon, this myth. And then when he finally confronts him, in skeleton form, I should tell you. Mm-hmm. Should remind yes. In skeleton. Yes, there are so many dead bodies. They literally stumble upon a massacre.
Hey, man, it's not a pirate treasure unless there's skeletons everywhere.
But, you know, when Mikey gets to that, you know, One-Eyed Willie, you know, in skeleton, he basically is... It's that, you know, it's kind of like the scene in Ready Player One when they finally get the Easter egg with Halliday. Like, he's... Yeah. It's, again, like... The point of the treasure is to gain independence, but it's not to become rich. It's not to become greedy, much like One-Eyed Willie was. Because you kind of get the sense through all of, like, Mikey's just, like, talks, or, you know, how he talks about One-Eyed Willie, that he kind of really was super obsessed with his goal. He kind of had what, you know, Lord of the Rings calls dragon sickness. And so, and that was, and to me, I think that's the way, and I think that's, you know, the powerful lesson is they kind of leave some of the gold, you know, and it was a good, because then, you know, the Fratellis grab the wrong gold and it sets up a booby trap. It basically lifts the ship up, you know, into the sea, essentially. So I don't know. Yeah. I really love the scene with Mikey and Skeleton One-Eyed Willie. Even though the implications are, oh my God, those kids stumbled upon just a whole bunch of dead bodies. But again, that was the 80s.
I never thought of it that way before. He just stumbled across all these dead bodies. It was, Yeah, I was just like, oh, a skeleton. I never associated skeletons with dead bodies, and I don't know why I never did. I guess that's me being a product of the 80s, where it was just skeletons dance. It is a great moment, though.
It is. But yeah, what else is there? So let me ask this. What are some of your favorite moments from this movie?
Individual moments is this pirate ship One-Eyed Willie definitely up there. The speech down below, down here's our time, are great. The Data's opening is fantastic. The movie for me though is the sum of all of its parts, in that it like I said at the beginning, it's like it kind of transports me back to this simpler time. You know, when, especially nowadays, when we weren't inundated with cell phones and technology, when you would just, you know, as a kid growing up, it was like, oh, it's Saturday afternoon, it's sunny out, and get on your bike, you go to a friend's house and you ride around and you do something stupid for the day, and you know, and that's what this movie is to me, is just, it's a Saturday afternoon. I mean, it's clearly not summer, but it's a Saturday afternoon when you're a kid hanging out. And it reminds me of that. And I think it perfectly captures that essence of especially my youth growing up in that time period.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, well, and also you have.
And Hey You Guys also.
Oh, yeah. You know, that would be a great idea for a movie website one day. You know, maybe even a podcast name. Hey, yo. But yeah, so let's get into the sloth of it all. What do you think of sloth?
Oh, sloth is awesome. Sloth is, again, something that could only exist in 1980, whatever, 5 or 6. It's, you know, he's a human puppet basically, and you just love sloth, and he's terrifying but lovable. And, you know, you bond over a chocolate bar, and which one of the Harold and Kumar movies even spoofed sloth in it. Everyone knows sloth. Everyone loves sloth. Everyone loves Hey You Guys. But it's just, do you think you would ever see a character like that ever again?
I'm surprised Stranger Things hasn't had a character like that. Because that would kind of fit into the whole universe idea of that. Like maybe have like one, maybe like have someone that was experimented with the Russian stuff and it went horribly wrong and created a mutation. But would we have it today? I don't know, why not? I mean, I think the problem is most people would be like, so should we get Dwayne The Rock Johnson to this, or should we definitely get Dwayne The Rock Johnson to play this Sawfly character?
Yes. Oh my gosh. 100% it would be. My thing though is I find, you know, a lot of studios are afraid to have fun like that. They're afraid to let that out because, you know, Sloth isn't the most attractive looking thing on the screen, and everything is all about that. And that's my one concern, is that nobody would actually go through with making Sloth appear like Sloth.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about Sloth. Even back then, I mean, yes, I get that he's physically deformed, but he's still pretty safe compared to what we were getting with the Fly, the Toxic Avenger, you know, what Trauma was doing, pretty much what Trauma was doing. So, I mean, it's not, I don't know why. I guess because no one wants to do makeup effects anymore, or they can't, or they don't want to pay for makeup effects anymore. So when we get the Goonies 2, Sloth is just going to be motion captured.
Bro, that would definitely have, it would be The Rock motion capturing Sloth, 100%. This sequel has been supposed to happen for 20 years now. There's supposed to be Goonies 2 has been in the works. I don't think we're ever going to get Goonies 2. I'm okay with no Goonies 2, to be perfectly frank.
Well, I mean, Chris Columbus has also been working on that Gremlins 3.
Gremlins 3, yeah.
excuse me. But, you know, I don't need a sequel to the Goonies. I think, you know, I don't need a reboot. I don't need, you know, I don't need the Force Awakens style soft reboot. Either.
Could you imagine they start the Goonies shared universe?
I
think Goonies works. I think there. I do think that there was a moment in time, probably 20 years ago, where I think a Goonies sequel could have worked in a lot of different respects. I think too much time has passed now. I don't think you get something. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe you would, but I think 15, 20 years ago, you know, to 15, 20 years after the original, I think you could come back and they could all kind of, you know, they're all adult. There was a way, I think, to have done it at that point. Now I just think, you know, these actors are what, 50? Approaching 50? As fun as it would be, it's just, I think there's a tipping point, and I think it's tipped over, and I think now you just leave it alone for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I kind of like to imagine that all the Amblin movies that did come out in the 80s, like E.T., Poltergeist, this, Back to the Future, they're all in the same universe.
Amazing.
Like, I kind of like to imagine it. It's just, you know, they just never team. You don't see Marty McFly teaming up with Mikey to fight, you know, One Eye Willie in the past. You just don't see that. But I'm okay with not having sequels because, like you said earlier, the Goonies is a snapshot in time when. You got to see a kid in the 80s or a group of kids in the 80s, you know, go on this, you know, adventure that nowadays probably wouldn't happen. Like, you wouldn't probably see kids being interested in a pirate map or the lore of this, you know, local legend. You know, they probably wouldn't be.
You know, it's not on a phone or a tablet, so no one would have any interest in it.
Yeah, I mean, not to try and throw young people under the bus or children under the bus, but I think, you know, the Goonies is a perfect snapshot of its time. And because also you have to understand, you know, it's just, you have to understand that that's what it was. That's what these people were thinking at that time. and that's what these people were afraid of at that time. I mean, Spielberg's mind, I don't know if Spielberg was like screwed over by a realtor or something, but this is second or third movie in a row where Spielberg is like, you know, these realtors that are foreclosing on people's homes, these banks, these,
you know, he probably stopped.
Because, you know, it's become like the central thing, I mean, in his movies. And I just like, you know, and I think for him to bring that up, to kind of bring up that problem, I think it was a big, you know, it was a big deal. Although, I mean, I should have done more research to figure out like what was the economics of that time, of the housing market in that time. But yeah, I think, like you said, it's a perfect snapshot. And I think to do another one like it without Donner, without Spielberg coming up with the story, without Columbus at his most, you have to remember Columbus at this age was still got a mean streak to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's just coming out of college.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he
was a few years removed.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, young. And he wanted to make a he started his career making a monster movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, or writing a I mean, the original Gremlins script is a lot more monster, much more of the Joe Dante monster movie we would know of from the earlier Joe Dante films. Spielberg kind of just softened it a bit to what it is now.
Yeah.
So, and even watching Goonies, it has a mean streak. I mean, there's, you know, people are getting shot. The Fratellis are threatening to kill kids.
Again, that's a product of its time, and nowadays I agree.
A kids movie would get away. Oh, I agree. It's just one of those things you wouldn't see from a director or a writer / director that didn't have that mean streak in them.
Mm-hmm. And now he's doing Christmas Chronicles.
Yeah, which I hear is a very nice movie.
I've seen them both now. I've seen one and two.
What do you think?
Yeah, they're very nice. they're innocent. They remind me of like the latter Santa Claus films with Tim Allen. Like maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit worse. You could tell that they're just having fun, and they don't, you know, they're like, here's a Santa Claus movie. We're having fun. You're going to watch it because it's got Santa Claus in it. And the reality is, I watched it because it has Santa Claus in it. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. I need to watch it because I hear a lot of good things about that first one. And I think the second one kind of impressed more people. So, yeah, I need to.
I haven't seen the first one. To be honest, I haven't seen the first one in 2 years. I saw it when it came out 2 years ago, and I just watched the second one. And I forgot a lot of the second one until I was watching it. It came back to me. The first one is, everyone has seen the story of like Santa's sleigh goes down. They're like, oh my God, we have to save Christmas. You know, it's that kind of story.
So like Elf, or the ending of Elf.
The ending of Elf. You know, so many Christmas specials have had the same thing. This one was a little bit different.
Oh, and like Tyrese was in Saves it. Christmas.
Yeah, it's just like that. It's just
okay.
Like, but it's, you know, it's different. It has this different. And Kurt Russell is, I thought Kurt Russell was a great Santa Claus, very different Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And you could tell him and Goldie Hawn are having the time of their lives just goofing off on set.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, is there any more to say on the Goonies? Is there any more to say on Goonies? Sorry.
No, I think, look, I think holding up is tough. I can't judge it holding up personally because I grew up with it. I know it so well. And that because it hasn't been years since I saw it last, that, you know, when you watch something, you're like, oh, I love that as a kid. Then you wait and you see it. You're like, oh, for me though, it's always kind of come back. So it has, I can't say if it holds up or not. I think everybody's got to be their own judge of it, but I grew up in that era, and it reminds me of, like I said, those Saturday afternoons, watch the cartoons, get on the bike, go out on some weird random adventure. And I never came across a pirate ship or any killers or anything, but you know, I was close probably once or twice.
You never know. Well, yeah, and I don't have a whole lot to say about the production of Goonies. As far as I know, it was a pretty tame one. It was very tame. I mean, obviously they cut a bunch of stuff here and there. But yeah, I don't know any of like, you know, crazy stuff. I mean, just everyone had a blast. Richard Donner was 55 when he made it, and he was kind of, you could kind of tell that he, you know, on the set videos that he was kind of like, ooh, yeah, working with, you know, seven kids today. Like, just, you know, barely keeping up, but, I mean, he
does. It's exhausting. It had to be exhausting, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Oh, he did a great job. Great. The movie's directed so well.
Yeah, it's very well done. Yeah, and that's all there is to say about The Goonies. The Goonies never say die, but this is the end for that podcast, this podcast. Where... James, where can the good people find you and your podcast?
You can follow me on my GoFundMe account, which is www.makegoonies2happen.gofundme.com. You can find me at Pets of Fina on Twitter and Instagram, but also you can find me at Rebel Scum Podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars. And Star Wars is something, I'll tell you that.
well, for you guys, it's an interesting time because we got The Mandalorian, so.
Yeah, and for everybody else, they just hate Star Wars. So it's a lot of fun to talk about it.
Yeah. No thanks to Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, well, it was like a 1-2 punch of Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. It just like a minefield. After a minefield, but you know, I just like Star Wars. My thing with Star Wars is this. Unlike Goonies, though, I wasn't born when Star Wars came out. I believe I was brought into it by the toys, and so my feeling on Star Wars is always just like, I like it. Like I've never once overthought Star Wars, and I think that really helps me. I don't expect too much from it. I don't expect too little from it, but I do believe that George Lucas. Like the prequels or not, I believe he was a better architect of story than anybody we've got in handling Star Wars since. I mean, maybe Favreau is up there. He's proven to have some, but I think Lucas, if you look at the stories he was telling, you take your dialogue and whatever away, the overall story is, it's missing. And again, like Goonies, like Spielberg with Goonies, there's something about that, though, you know, those, the writers, directors that time period, the American Zoetrope, that time period where you're like, this group of filmmakers, they were just doing what they wanted to do. Like they were like, I would watch this movie, so I'm going to make it. And today, you know, everything is by committee and we don't necessarily get that. So that's my long-winded way of saying, I host a Star Wars podcast, co-host a Star Wars podcast, and you should listen to me ramble.
Absolutely. Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, James. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. I promise more of these are going to come out. The submarine retrospectives are also coming. Everything's coming. I'm just very, very busy as we enter the holiday season. Oh. So it's just chaos right now for me. But thank you all. Thanks, James, again. And we'll be back with y'all soon for Young Sherlock Holmes.
Awesome.
But they're not alone.
Trunk, I hope that was your stomach.
No. That's the it. Sounds like Kong.
Discover what they uncover.
There's rubies and emeralds and diamonds.
The lost map.
Whoa! This is the start of the tunnel.
The secret caves.
Hey, Mikey! You can hear me! Run! Run! They're coming after you!
Chuckler!
The hidden clues.
Mikey!
The treacherous traps.
Hello, Sheriff. I'm at the Lighthouse Lounge. Murder.
Just like that last prank about all those little creatures that multiply when you throw water on them.
Take the oath.
They're here.
Join the adventure. as Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.